The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Happy Friday. We do this every Friday. It's the best time of the week. It's Friday. I get to talk to my great friend, Michael Coleman, the heart of Alabama Food Bank. We do a show called Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mission, your mind. It's a business show. And then, of course, right after this on our Tony Curry Radio Network, Bite by Bite, which is a show specific to the heart of Alabama Food Bank. Michael, how you doing, brother? Happy Friday. I see you got your Crimson Tide on. Big ball game third.
Man,
Saturday in October. Tennessee got the best of them last year. We'll see if Alabama can bite back. I think they get it done tomorrow night, but happy weekend to you, brother.
You as well. Yeah, I'm becoming a Ty Simpson believer.
And 16 touchdowns, one pick, or I think he's responsible for 16 touchdowns and one pick in about two or three weeks ago. Where was he? And he's doing against top shelf competition.
Two big SEC wins on the road. Yeah, so yep. I'm very impressed.
And also, we talked about this briefly. He went up to Caden Proctor, one of his left tackles, after the game, and Caden said he basically tore himself a new one by saying, listen, I got sacked four times tonight. That can't happen anymore. Taking a leadership skill. And let's start right there, and we'll get some emails too. info@tonycurryradio.net, because I know you had a very interesting week as well. I did too. It's all good, but lots of stuff to talk about. Have you ever seen a leader become a leader before your eyes? You were in the military. You probably were around a lot of people that were thrown into the military because they had no leadership skills and they needed to be toughened up. So I'm imagining you could probably have some pretty good stories. But for people that were in that locker room, they had never seen a side of Ty Simpson like that. And they were like, wow, where is this coming from? He blew up. And it was after a win. Have you ever seen that? And what caused that to happen?
Yeah, I would tell you lots of times there are people who, because we tend to think of leadership as only being vocal. And lots of times a leader does need to step forward in a group, especially if there's uncertainty or hesitation or, you know, people getting the blame game. And sometimes, like, you know, with a Nick Saban like presence, and of course, Ty's not there. But standing up and saying, no, this is right. This is wrong. This is what we're going to tolerate. This is what we're not going to tolerate. And, you know, but a lot of people don't want to do that because then you subject yourself to criticism. As soon as you fail, they're like, well, you know, why are you criticizing me and all that? And I've seen a lot of people, though, who have a lot of leadership, but they're not as vocal with it. And I think in the past, they've talked about Ty Simpson like that. But when you're in football in certain situations, you have to be more dynamic with your leadership. It can't be assumed, if you will. You can still do leadership things, even if you're quiet. But the bottom line is, if you're going to be a leader, you have to be able to bring accountability. And accountability is most of the time calling people out. And lots of times it's not necessarily just targeted. It's saying, this is what is right. This is what's going to make us successful. If you're not doing this, you're wrong and you need to adjust. And so you're bringing that accountability to force people to look at themselves. And I think that's what he did. And he did it in a very forceful way. Because I will tell you, one of the part I did not actually hear about the four sour, he got on him. I did see he mentioned something in the article that I was reading that it sounded like on the Monday after the win, this past Monday, that maybe there was not a serious attitude, and he was calling them out on that. And one of the things that Nick Saban was so good, he never lost a game hardly that he was supposed to win. Yep. And so Kalen DeBoer has shown, hey, last year he lost three games. This year, the only game he's lost, all of those were games that they were supposed to win.
Yep.
So the thing that made Nick Saban so great was not all the great games that he won, but he could have them ready to play week in and week out to focus on the right things and to win the games he was supposed to win. Now, did he elevate them to do? Yeah, but most coaches can get their players up for a big game to play well.
Sure.
You know, but when you're coming back the next week and you're playing, you know, Louisiana Monroe.
Monroe, I know you bring that up. Yeah.
So, and then, matter of fact, to this day, Nick Saban says that's the most embarrassing loss in the first season when they lost to a Louisiana Monroe. You know, he's mortified. And but that was the next year is when, you know, it takes you a little bit of time to get your people, build your culture, you know, college football. And he had it already down by year two.
Yeah, he did.
But anyway, so I was glad to see Ty step forward because I think that's the biggest thing is they think they won some games and they turn right around to somebody. They go, oh, well, you know, we should be able to beat Tennessee. Not take practice as serious, not be as focused. And Tennessee, you know, take you by a couple of touchdowns because they flat sure have the ability to do it.
They will,
you,
no doubt.
If you take them,
they will no doubt shut. And I will say this. I'm glad that game's at home for some reason. It just feels better that game's going to be at Bryant Denny, particularly since they got the best of them last year. So we'll see what happens. They're favored by 8.5 in that game. So we'll see what happens. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. I have an email here from a 101-year-old from your neck of the woods that I'm going to read here before the end of the show that came across. Yeah. And I had to go through it a couple of times. She hunted and pecked on her keyboard till she could write out, but I thought it was great. Actually, I was going to give
bless
her a call.
Her heart.
So yeah. And she had something very, very interesting to talk about. You know, whenever you get someone that's got that many, decades of equity, of experience, we always want to know, how'd you do it? How did you make your marriage last 50 years? You know, da 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 da. So she gave a very nice piece of advice that I think that you'll really get off on. So that's nice. One thing we have to deal with every single week. I've been super blessed. I only have one person that I have to deal with. And I've always had one person I have to deal with, and as long as things are going okay and we understand each other, sometimes I'll go a week. I won't even talk to the guy. Sometimes we talk to each other 3 or 4 times a day. I'm going to talk to him right after the show today. I got some things we got to do. Yeah. And he pretty much does whatever I need him to do. The only thing I would say that he does, sometimes he goes a little too fast. He's one of those guys that gets done really fast. Sometimes he misses some of the smaller things. And when you're a small business, you have to pay attention to some of those things. But he's done a wonderful job. But when you're talking about a crew, how many you had 30, how many people you have under you?
We're about 45 right now.
45, but you had 30 something when you got there, right? Correct.
Right. 36. Yeah.
So yeah, you hired, I remember you telling me you hired a good, and that should speak volumes about what you're doing with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, but dealing with people on a regular basis and managing this people. And we've had a lot of shows about this and you've had an interesting week and that's why we want to talk about that. Just talk about some of the ramifications behind that. First of all, let's back it up. Let me start the question by saying, what makes Michael Coleman right when you walk in the office? Because if you are not right, then your employees can't be right. If you're walking in with a sourpuss idea and you're not having a good weekend, or maybe you get some personal things or whatever, that will certainly trickle down to your employees, and that's not fair to them. So how does Michael Coleman, I know you pick the Bible up every morning, but how does Michael Coleman get right for work every morning?
I will tell you, I start off every day with a prayer of gratitude. And I list, it's not a long prayer, but I list all the things that I'm thankful for that otherwise could easily be taken for granted. And especially when you look at the trouble of the world. I mean, obviously, we live in a country with the greatest resources, and I don't have an extravagant house or anything like that. But I mean, it's just things that I know otherwise that so many of us will focus on the negative rather than the positive. And so I could rattle off 10 things before I even get out to my car. You know, I slept in a comfortable bed with a comfortable, under comfortable temperature, although we do need rain, no rain coming down on top of my head, in a relatively safe neighborhood, if I got hungry in the middle of the night, there's food in the refrigerator to go get something, or get up, get a hot bath, hot shower, running water, clothes to put on, And having a purpose in life, going to a job that, you know, you get to make a difference in. And when you it's kind of ingrained in me now, but when you live in that space, and I try to, it's hard to start your day off on a bad day. However, there are days like that. And sometimes what I find is more times than not, it's not about the job itself. It's dealing with the complexity of people. And, you know, when you take in things like how complex humans are with, you've got everybody's motivate has different motivations. Everybody's at a different emotional intelligence. Everybody's communication styles are different. Their expectations are different. And they all vary from what I would say exactly the organizational goals. And so you run into some of the, you know, it's not just about having always a good employee. So I would say a good employee on a very basic level is somebody who comes in and is, adopts or adapts, to the culture, has a mindset of, I want to be a team player. I want to work hard. I want to have a good work ethic. I want to help the organization prosper and achieve its goals. And most of my employees would tell you that they feel that way. Mm-hmm. But then when you start living that out and the complexities, I mean, it could be something as simple as, you know, everybody has things that happen in their life, stresses in their marriage, money troubles, pressures, children, sickness, health, family, everything, all of that dynamic, that's just one element. And then they come in and then, like I said, now their mind's somewhere else, or they have things like they can't see themselves as others see them. The whole dynamic, that this baggage that they bring, they might have a nasty disposition, just very naturally. They don't default to positivity. They default to negativity.
Yeah, they do.
And so you just go on and on and on about how you get sideways with people. And matter of fact, I've never talked to a CEO or anybody in a leadership or a management position that doesn't say they spend exponentially more time dealing with people and their issues than other things, than other areas. So it's, you know, lots of times I sit down and go, okay, why is that? You know? And so I said, well, why don't we talk about that? Because there's some real challenges, but understand it. You at least begin to go down a path to make it better. You're never going to fix it. We're too broken as people, to include myself, and too complex to fix it. But how can you work past it to still maintain a healthy work culture?
You and you always talk about this because I know you're a compassionate guy and you're in the compassionate business. But how do you deal with the? Because there are some people that just want to vent. And again, you got some people that are flying high that are good that aren't positive. They're just negative Nellies. It's the way they are. And then you have people that are the opposite. They're not like consider us both in that boat where we're the glass half full kind of people. We'll try to find the bright spot and everything that happens. But, yeah. What do you do? Because you're talking about 40 different employees. I'm sure you got some people that just love to come in and probably bellyache. Maybe work is a place where they can do that, because if they do it at home, they'll find themselves on the couch or out in the backyard. How do you deal with people like that? And you don't want to be that guy where, oh no, here he comes again. You know, but at the right. same time, you want to act like you're interested enough in their personal life to know that, hey, listen, I got a pretty cool boss here.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't take you long to kind of size people up. And I've told people, you know, I expect them, because everybody's got things going on in their life. I expect them that from, you know, 6 o'clock to 3:30, however long they're here, to do their best to put the mission first in the organization. However, I also realize things can overwhelm you. Like I said, you have an illness or financial challenges. And so I tell them, Look, you know, we understand that while we want you to put the organization first, that sometimes that's simply not possible. And so we tell them, if you will talk about and discuss these issues, we will bring resources to try to help you navigate that. And so we're showing our care and support by doing that. Now, one of the things that get frustrated about is when somebody highlights something. Now, it's just like with my kids, and I'm saying my grown kids, when they say, hey, I'm battling this, and they're looking for some ideas, I try to give them as much information as I can, then let them make the choice. And I always tell them, and I've stated this before, I always tell them, do you want to know what I would do in this case? I've given you all the information, but I don't want to influence you or make you feel like if you don't do it my way, I'm going to be upset. And I tell employees all the time, I get you're having some problems. Let's talk it out. Let's get you some resources. Let's try to help. And we want to do that because if I can help you navigate a personal issue successfully, then I'm going to have a better employee. But I'm not doing it just from the organizational standpoint. I want you to know that we genuinely care about you. And so we will do that. But again, with wherever you're talking about, there's got to be certain boundaries. I had a guy who, you know, battled, and I've known him for years and years and years, and gave him a job here. And I think deep down inside, he's a big old teddy bear. But he just couldn't manage his emotions. And so he would come in and vomit out all his emotions and say, you know, he's struggling with this, he's struggling with that. And we would listen and we would coach and we would say, okay, you know, you have 100% healthcare paid for. You can go see a counselor. You could, we would try to, you know, and we'll help you navigate all that. But he was unable or unwilling, I think, to make changes. And some people get into that to where they really don't want to fix the problem. They just want to bitch and moan about their life.
Yep.
And again, so it's all a judgment call. If somebody, I've even had people want to come in and vent about me to me. And I say, sure, close the door. I'll let you say whatever you want to say, get it off your chest, you know, say whatever you want to say. What I have found though is, the vast majority of time, I've always told people in the military, they used to always tell us, don't ask why, you just execute. I told you to do something, you just execute. And the whole purpose behind that is because if you challenge every order that's given you and you're trained to do that, then in a wartime situation, when you're under tense thing, you don't respond to the command. And sometimes you just have to respond to the command. Well, I've told people, we're not in war. I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but we're not in war. And the bottom line is I do have a reason for everything I'm telling you. And I don't mind taking the time to explain the reason as much as I can. Now, once I take the time to explain it, you're free to disagree, but you're not free to not do it. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, and I said, if you ask me a question and I can't provide you the reason, then I need to go back and reevaluate, because that means I may have put something in place, but I've not thought it out well enough. It's a good example. I have a monthly luncheon with new employees. Mm-hmm. And it's my chance to kind of sit down with them. And so we had four new employees. We were going around the table. And the guy said, I just want to say that I don't feel like I get paid enough, that I feel like the salary's too low. And
it's a new employee, right?
Brand new employee. Okay. And I said, well, I get that. I said, but now, let me explain to you the counter to that. And it was a truck driver. And I said, we're off. You work every day. You're off by 3:30 in the afternoon. So you're not doing any overnight long hauling. Mm-hmm. You're home every day by 3:30 to be with your family. So you only work a half a day. You're off by 12 every Friday. And so you don't work weekends. So you got 2.5 days every day to be at home with your family. You get 100% medical, dental, vision. So all of that doesn't cost you a dime. And I said, so add $10,000
at least.
It's really more than that, because I told her, we pay $710 a month for each employee to get medical, dental, and so as I start walking through that all that with him, and he's like, I start to, so it starts to add up, and then he sees the benefits of not having to do a lot of things that we had another truck driver happen to be in there, and he goes, well, I wanted to come off the road because sometimes you'll see your family for almost a month where you're just, he said, and you're driving in the snow in the wintertime over the Rocky Mountains and everything else, and there's narrow roads. And he said, the guy told him, he was training him, he said, when you start going downhill in the snow, he said, there's no barrier. And if your brakes aren't working, if you're carrying 80,000 pounds, you can't stop a truck if something happens. He said, you always unbuckle your seatbelt. And he goes, why? He said, because if you're going downhill and you can't get out, you've got to jump out because that truck's going over the edge to save your life. So he was like, so I'm very happy with the situation, you know, because they brought him off the road. So again, it was all about perspective, but it really didn't bother me. I kind of chuckled that somebody comes in and because I wanted to say, look, dude, you were told what the salary was and you accepted the job. Mm-hmm. How do you turn around and complain about it? But he certainly had a different attitude once I took the time to walk him through and explain that. But that right there, it was such a good illustration of just those two truck drivers coming from different perspectives, had a different level of maturity based on what they've experienced, had different goals in life. And so I even told them, I said, look, I get lots of people have a side hustle. I mean, it's not hard to have a side hustle here. If you're working 4 days, I mean, I get it. We start at 6 o'clock in the morning, but you're off by 3:30. And a half a day on Friday and all the weekends, that's lots of time to, you know, work you to get you a part-time job or to do some extra things. So anyway, it doesn't frustrate me so much, but I'm telling you, people are still, it can get exhausting after a while.
You've been in the non-for-profit world for a long time, your Jimmy Home Mission. So you've been one of those guys where a lot of people feel comfortable coming to you with their problems. I would put you in the same breath with a police officer, a lawyer, maybe even a teacher, a priest. I always try to remember that because, you know, you have a life too. And you certainly should hear the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. And I always think it's funny because I do some therapy and some counseling with a couple of individuals on a regular basis. And we kind of have an understanding that I'll allow you to vent and tell me how you feel and get it all out. And then we cool off and then we sit down and then we say, okay, how are we going to tackle this? How are we going to get through this problem? How are we going to make things better? At least point the boat in the right direction. Right. So the next time you come in and talk to me, we're pointing the right direction. You're either, my background, you're either relapsing or recovering. You're either recovering or relapsing. And that's what I'm dealing with. And so, you know, we always want to be pointing towards recovery. And if it's somebody that wants to come in and talk about the same things over and over and over again, and many times it's a relationship. It's they're not happy with their wife. They don't have the support they need, blah, 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 blah. Then you eventually get to the point where you're like, okay, we've already been down this road a million times. And I understand where you're coming from. And we've discussed the idea that you have to discuss how to make it better. If you're just venting and listening and not saying anything and they're asking you questions. Now, some people just don't, they want to vent, but don't keep coming to me and venting me over and over and over again about the same issue. If you're not willing to change and do something different about it, if you're stuck in that position and you can't do anything about it, and there is nothing literally you can do, then that's a you problem. That's when you got to change your attitude, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I'll give you a good example. So we had a guy that, cause we have inmates that do, a work development, a day release, that kind of thing. And so I always tell them, hey, if you do a good job while you're here, while you're still an inmate, when you get out, I'll give you a job. And so this kid got out. He had about five kids. He was in there for drugs, but was a good worker. So I gave him a job, started him out $15.50, full benefits, everything. And he had some financial, you know, just didn't have any money to get established. So we kind of fronted him some dollars. And of course, that's a risk.
Yeah.
Kind of fronted him some dollars to get some deposits. Just, anyway, so his baby mama, so to speak, is still on drugs. And so he starts coming in and, you know, he gets written up because he's got a terrible attitude. And so he was getting another major write-up. And so they asked, hey, would you be willing to talk with him? And I said, sure, I don't know that it'll do any good because lots of times it doesn't. But I'm going to tell you, man, I brought him in and he had a supervisor and then his supervisor's supervisor. And I said, man, I just want, here's going to be a little man-to-man talk because he's never had a father and everything else. And and so I just said, hey, man, look, here's the deal. You know, we have done nothing but pour. I said, I want you to look out into the world. If you lose this job and you go out to the world, how many people do you have on the outside who gives a shit about you? And he said, nobody. And I said, exactly. I said, because that's what the world is. This is what I need you to see. The world itself is a cruel, hard place. We in society say you either adapt to the customs of and rules of our society or we remove you out of society. That's what prison's for.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, you have a ton of challenges right now, but, and he's starting to tear up. And I said, you know, tell me what's going on. So it turns out the children are now staying with her mother, who is also very sick, but he's been going to her mother's house every single day. But the mom's taken the SNAP benefits, gets about almost $1,000 a month. She's selling about $600 a month and turned into cash. And so you know what that means.
Yep.
He's using it for drugs or whatever. And his focus was, I've got to get, he's not even in love with her. He said, I've got to help her get over addiction so she can be the right mom for the kids. Mm-mm. And I told him, I said, buddy, you can't fix her, you know, right now. And I said, if you get kicked out of here, if we fire you, you're going to end up back in prison. And now you've destroyed the lives of those young kids, because right now you go and see them every day. This gives them something to look forward to. It gives them the right influence. I said, it makes all the difference in the world. And I know how hard this is. But the truth of the matter is, he didn't even have a perspective of, he's like, I don't want to call DHR about the SNAP because I'm scared they're going to put my kids in, you know, in foster care. And so we talked through that. And I said, no, you know, we can call. I said, DHR is not looking to put your kids in. They're looking to protect your kids. But you've got to have a good plan for them. And the truth of the matter is, there's worse places to be than foster care for your children if they are in a dangerous situation and not being taken care of. So, but here's what I told him, though. I mean, he was teary-eyed. And I said, but look, brother, what you've seen here, we've fronted you money. We're poured into you. I said, I would have already fired somebody who hadn't been through what you've been through. But look, we will help you. We will surround you. We care about you. We want you to be successful. We're rooting for you. So we're going to get some more information. We're going to help you help create a pathway for you forward. And but here's the bottom line. Is you got to do something for me. And that is, you've got to come here and not push back every time you're told to do something or every time you're corrected on something. And he's tearing up and getting all teary eyed. He said, I won't. He said, I'll come every day and I'll do what I'm told. And I'm so thankful for this job. If I lose this job, I won't have anything. Now, I've had people tell me that, and the next day they come in and do the same thing.
Yeah.
But my hope is that pouring into him and giving him a different perspective, because what happens right now, the only perspective he has is he can't fix the mother of his children, and his children are suffering. And what does he do? And so sometimes through the relationship, you got to pull them out and say, wait a minute. It's not as bad as you think. You do have people who care about you. You do have people that will help you. But this can't be about you. It's got to be, you know, you've got to do your part. And trust me, we're going to stand up next to you. We're going to see you through this. We're going to give you the resources you need. But that's one person who's bringing all this baggage, this street mindset, the street challenges, and with no understanding about how to navigate this space. And then you turn around and everybody else is saying, yeah, well, I've got my own issues. And then you're trying to move an organization forward. So it gives you a window into why managing people is so complex and so challenging for, like I said, every leader out there who's ever had to do it.
Oh man. And that's a great story. And you're just giving me another individual to put on my prayer list for today, because I root for people like that. I do, and I really do. And
I think he's such a good kid.
It's so easy to stigmatize people like that. And it's so sad, because you have to give everyone the benefit of the doubt at least once in that particular situation. So I pray that goes on. Great story. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. We only have time for just a couple of emails here. Really, we're kind of up against it, but we can go long, brother. It's my radio station. I'll do whatever the hell I want.
All right.
Got two of them. First up, we had this one from this 101-year-old I wanted to get into. But Todd from Wetumpka wants to know, how long can we go with a government shutdown before we actually start to feel it?
Well, there's a million variables in that. I say the people who begin to feel it are the people who aren't getting paychecks. And then when you're not getting paychecks, then depending on what you have in reserve, which so many people don't have any reserves, then that's going to really, that's when people start howling. And the more howling right now, I think, because the military is getting paid, Trump's shifting some dollars around, trying to find, typically it takes a month or so before people really start feeling the impact. You know, our economy is so deep and so broad and so has so many variables. It can absorb temporary shocks, you know, in the stock market and flows of revenue back and forth. It can absorb a lot of that kind of stuff. So it takes a while for changes, even like tariffs, to cycle through the economy. Can end up, you don't really feel the effects of it or see the effects of it for months. And so I think that's the biggest thing. The truth of the matter is, when it comes to government agencies, the average person doesn't feel anything, because the average middle class person, you'd be inconvenienced maybe if you couldn't get your driver's license renewed. And those are state dollars, so that's not really applicable, but on federal type things. And so you can get some delays and things like that. But the truth of the matter is, it hasn't affected my life one iota, because I don't depend on the government. Now, it could, if it affected the food bank, it could affect the people that I serve. But the truth of the matter is that the average person is not affected by the daily decisions that are found in the government. And so when the people who are most affected, employees, people who depend on money being approved and sent down, you know, through block grants to the states and all that other kind of stuff, when that begins to, when that well begins to run dry is when you will start to see movement. Because right now, Republicans and Democrats are both saying we're not budging, which means neither one of them are getting enough heat from their base to pressure them to make a different decision.
Well, once the healthcare, and I'm part of that, once the healthcare thing starts to change, that's going to end up whether we're running the government or not. Once that starts to change, I think that's probably when you'll start seeing some people stop crabbing around and start moving forward. All right, from Marla in Montgomery, she sent me this email, and she basically just sent me a link. She said, more people need to live like this. She sent me this article of a woman who is 101 years old. She owns a jewelry business in New York City. She's run it for over 60 years, and they were asking her, how'd you do it? You know, what makes you happy? Blah, 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 blah. And this is what she said. She said, I quote, you must shower. You must eat. You must take care of yourself. If you don't like what you're doing, then change. Make the most of that day. And so this woman said that she actually took it. She said, I wrote it down and I put it on my refrigerator. And I just, coming from a woman, she's she goes, I'm happy that I work every day. She works 6 days a week. She's 101 years old. I'll never forget, there's a friend of mine who owns a Sneaky Pete's down. I used to go to Sneaky Pete's every Saturday after work down there on Montgomery Highway, and him and his wife work. And every time I'm in there, I see him and his wife work every single time. It could be nighttime, daytime, whatever. And I go, man, do you ever take any time off? And he goes, you know, we take a couple of days off here and there, summertime, blah, blah, blah. We pretty much run the place. And I said, well, you poor son of a gun, don't you? And he goes, Tony, I love what we do. He goes, I love it. I love making hot dogs. I love being service. I love making hot. And my wife loves making hot dogs. Yeah. And you just think to yourself, really? But it's whatever it takes to make you happy, you know? And so the old saying, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. I'm in that boat. My son, man, threw something in my face a couple of months ago. I don't know if I shared it with you. By the way, my son turns 21 today. Santo, happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
He listens to all my podcasts. Happy birthday to you, son. He turns 21 today. But I always said, you know, I was really frustrated. Wasn't more attitude than gratitude. And was talking to another friend of mine who just retired. Has pension, the whole nine yards, is going to spend the rest of his life traveling with his family and stuff. And here I am about ready to turn 60 next year, starting all over again. I was belly aching and bitching and moaning. And Santo said, Dad, you've been retired since you were born. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you've told me you've never worked a day in your life. You're already retired. Yeah. He said, if you decided today you didn't want to work anymore, he said, what would you do tomorrow? I said, probably not podcast. I call Michael Coleman. Probably a podcast. Yeah. I'm talking to Michael Coleman about a podcast. He goes, exactly. He says, you do what you love to do. And so every single day, you know, you're loving. And I said, you know, you're right. You're right. And as long as I've got enough, you know, I can't take it with me when I go. As long as I've got enough to get me to the finish line, hopefully it'll be another 30 years, then I am a blessed man. So that's a good thing. So anything you want to say on that, we'll end it on that note. Anything you want to say?
No, I love the idea that, you know, and this is one of the great things I love about our country is if you don't like what you're doing, change your circumstances. If you're like, I want to make more money, then work harder or go get the skills to make more money.
Yep.
Right now, the state of Alabama, one of the things I heard that I went to hear Tommy Tuberville, who's going to be the next governor, and he was talking about, he wants to change. He's putting together a plan. He said, you know, after you get in the 10th grade, 11th and 12th grade's a lot of half days off and work programs and study halls and gym and all that kind of stuff. He said, I want to get, you know, all these people and all these students, when they get in the 10th, 11th, 12th grade, start training, learning the skill a skill to get out of school, you know, whether it's electrical, plumbing, some of those core things that we used to teach many, many years ago mm-hmm. that we desperately are going to need. I don't care how much AI is going to do for you. It ain't going to get out there and lay pipe.
You're right.
It's not going to come in and fix toilets and everything. Mm-hmm. That's right. All of that. So, he said that education is the key, you know, regardless of how someone may feel about the politics. The idea is that, you know, and I've said this for a long time, the only escape out of poverty, the only escape out of low income or skills and workforce development, and Alabama may be as good as anybody in the nation, provides opportunity through 25 community colleges and locate in, you know, across the state, to be able to get access to training, and that's practically free, to meet industry needs. And so anyway, change your circumstances if you don't like. So I love the idea that she still goes to work 6 days a week at 101. She feels like she's got a purpose. She enjoys life. And get it, lady.
It's a beautiful
I'm impressed.
Thing. Beautiful yeah. thing. Stay tuned here to Tony Curry Radio. Over 100,000 subscribers, 18 different shows. We're always growing. We got some new shows coming up in January that I'm really, really excited about here on the Tony Curry Radio Network. And, of course, another show we love to do, Bite by Bite, which is coming up here next, right here on TKR. Thank you, my friend. Have a good weekend. Roll Tide.
You as well.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.